Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
Lillian Roxon. If you're a fan of music, you might be across that name. If not, you need to know her name. She was called the Mother of Rock. Now, that's a big title for anyone, really. And she was a journalist who was one of the first to take rock music seriously. She interviewed some of the biggest names in the business before they were big and also gave the world her famous rock encyclopedia. Lillian Roxon was, funnily enough, also Australian. And the National Film and Sound Archives have put together a terrific online collection of Lillian Roxon's interviews. Beth Taylor is a producer at the Archives. Hello, Beth.
Hello.
Lillian Roxon, also Australian. What era are we talking about?
Right, yeah. So she was very much around in the 60s and 70s. That was her heyday. She moved to America in the late 50s, but she was also part of The Push in Sydney. So she came through Sydney University.
What was The Push in Sydney for those people who don't know?
It was a libertarian social movement that were very interested in women being liberated, and also a lot of philosophical underpinnings that would have really informed what she did later on. So she was very interested in feminism.
Yep.
She was really interested in political change, but she was also taking things seriously that other people weren't taking seriously, such as rock music.
That's interesting. And how did that take her to predominantly America, where she then began her career?
That's right. Well, yeah, she just wanted to write, and I think Australia maybe wasn't ready for her. So she had to go to a bigger pond, basically, and she created a real stir when she asked the Beatles manager whether he was a millionaire. Everyone kind of turned to her and thought, who is this lady? Like, she had a real understanding. She wasn't afraid of anyone, and I think she was writing for the Sydney Morning Herald as a foreign correspondent. She was the first female Australian foreign correspondent, and she just had so many firsts. So, yeah, America was her home, and she went to Max's Kansas City. That was a place that kind of became her place where she would write and think and meet with people. And just researching this story, I fell in love with the idea of one place being such a powerful center of the universe, basically.
Yeah.
And this breeding ground for all this music. So anyone who was anyone was going to Max's Kansas City, they were performing there, and they were meeting Lillian and talking with her.
Why did Lillian see the importance, or what did Lillian see in rock music that she felt was important?
Well, I think first and foremost, she was a fan, and that was something she never forgot. And I think that was something that led her to connect with audiences so strongly. So she used to get 1,000 pieces of fan mail every week that she would answer directly, because people, I really felt like she was speaking for the people, but she also had this fantastic mind. So she was almost becoming friend-like. I guess you could say she was friends with these rock musicians, but she was not afraid to tell them if she didn't like their latest track. And so she just had this amazing kind of fearless relationship with them. And I think that that's why we look back at her now, and her work is just so incredible. But she never forgot how much she loved the music, and that comes through in everything she does.
That's interesting, because as a journalist these days, we're often told you can't be a fan. You have to come at it from an objective point of view, and you have to be I can't even think of the word. What is it?
Objective.
And, you just can't look at anything like that. Was that the magic in what she did, do you think?
Maybe, yeah. She definitely included herself in the story. It was around the time of new journalism, this idea that the writer was part of the story, and she was really making up the rules.
Yeah.
She was friends with all of the writers as well, and they had her in a really amazing relationship where they were fans of each other's work. And it was just this time of an incredible melting pot of ideas and people and talent, and very international as well. So she brought a lot of Australian bands over to America. She was very instrumental in Helen Reddy's career. She inspired Helen Reddy to write the song I Am Woman. Because there was...
I have a lot to learn. I did not know
that. Yeah, she was just such an incredible figure.
Yeah. I'm with Beth Taylor from the National Film and Sound Archives, and they've dug out some wonderful stuff from the archives about and featuring Lillian Roxon, who is considered the godmother of rock, or is that the right term? The mother of rock.
The mother of rock.
Let's hear Lillian speaking now. This one, she's talking about David Bowie.
I love Bowie.
Bowie projects such incredible sexuality on stage you could die, you know, when he's trying. You know, one of the things Bowie does is he makes erotic advances at his guitarist. Chase stalks him around the room and then sort of jumps him, which sounds a little bit crude, but it's actually very sexy. Well, I said to Mick, well, would you ever do that? And he said, oh, they wouldn't take any notice if I did that. But the point is, I can tell that Mick is just a little bit envious of being able to get away with that sort of completely glamorous. I mean, Bowie is very glamorous. It's not one-tenth the musician than Mick is, you know. Bowie flew 20 of us over to England from New York to watch him perform in a small English country town, and there was a press conference, and Angela inexplicably came and bit me on the bosom. I think he was getting too much attention, and she wanted to get some attention, and since there were a lot of newspapers there, I think the story ran about 19 newspapers.
The voice of Lillian Roxon there from the National Film and Sound Archives. Beth, what's that from? What era are we talking? What was she talking about, obviously, yeah, other than David Bowie?
Yeah, so that was her talking about the Rolling Stones tour. She came back to Australia fairly regularly to visit family. It was 1973, I think, that was recorded. That was for 2SM. So it just became a very long-ranging conversation. It's about an hour and a half in length. And I just enjoyed listening to every minute of it. I mean, you would not hear something like Angie Bowie biting a journalist on the right bosom anymore. And she goes on in that clip to say that later on Angie sent her some beautiful little roses to kind of apologise. It's just, I love that clip because it perfectly encapsulates this incredible world that Lillian was living in. And she was about 10 or 15 years older than a lot of the musicians she was covering, which I guess is where the mother of rock comes from. And so you just get this idea of her being sort of this grand dame of this situation where she's able to just say to Mick, you know, where's your sex appeal? And but Bowie's half the musician that you are. Like, she just brought it. And isn't she amazing?
And she's a mile a minute running.
Oh, that's right. That's her trying to be slow. So, friends say that tell stories of her typing on her typewriter while she's carrying out a conversation with someone in the room, and she'd also be on the phone. She just had a lot going on.
We've got another grab here where she's talking about her experiences with John Lennon. Can you give us some background on this, Beth?
Yeah, well, John Lennon and Yoko were visiting New York, and almost like a concerned friend, she's saying that she really hopes that they get to get away from their entourage a little bit and actually experience something of the city.
Well, it's about time. John Lennon and his missus came to New York to visit and actually dared to venture out of their hotel and mingle with the citizens. They asked a friend, Village Voice columnist Howard Smith, to take them out on the town and show them the sights. They went to Max's Kansas City restaurant, where the city's most spectacular and lovable freaks hang out, and finished the evening having dinner with artist Bridget Polk, who tape-recorded the whole encounter for posterity. They went to lunch with filmmaker Andy Warhol, who took them shopping. Did they hear any music? Oh, yes. They went all the way down to Washington Square Park in Greenwich Village to hear David Peel and the Lower East Side, a group that flatly refuses to perform anywhere except parks and the streets. This has been Lillian Roxon with the Brightside Discotheque, presented daily by Brightside, the new shampoo for hair that feels fresh and alive. So go organic. And tomorrow I'll tell you about Jim Morrison and the Doors.
Brightside, hair and shampoo. And tomorrow we'll tell you about the Doors. That's what radio used to be like. She was talking about Radio Discotheque. What was that? And is this in the National Film and Sound Archives?
Yes, this is very precious. So we have one disc that contains a number of recordings of this show, and it was done in 1971, which was a couple of years before she died. She died tragically early at around the age of 40. And that was something that was syndicated all around America. And I think it was also heard in Australia too. They're just these little bite-sized chunks of her talking about her just waxing lyrical, basically. She must have had to pump them out, and she would discuss a different thing every show.
Incredible. And then do an ad as well.
That's,
I love
right.
it.
For shampoo.
For shampoo. We should be doing that here at the ABC. No, we don't need that.
No,
but that sounded quite delightful, actually. It's lovely to hear her voice. We are talking about Lillian Roxon, the mother of rock is her subtitle, I guess you could call it. You said she died tragically. What was the situation there?
She had bad asthma, and I think New York in the early 70s was really smoggy, and that made it a lot worse. But she couldn't move away from, you know, this epicenter of culture. And so, unfortunately, her asthma got progressively worse and worse. She took about 3 years to write her Encyclopedia of Rock, and that was over 600 pages long and just such an incredible work that she would work sort of 24 hours a day because she was also writing for the Sydney Morning Herald, and then she'd come home at night and write for that. And her health really declined then, and she had she was on steroids, and they also were not agreeing with her. So unfortunately, she just had a terrible, terrible attack, and she died.
Oh, that's so unfortunate. You don't really hear of that happening so much these days. Was it because the medicine wasn't as accessible?
I think the medication, and she also just maybe the healthcare in America at that time was not so great, because she would often ring Australian doctors to try and talk about it because she wasn't getting the care that she needed there. So, yeah, she would very much still be with us, hopefully, if she had have gotten better care, maybe.
Yeah. Beth Taylor is from the National Film and Sound Archives. We're talking about Lillian Roxon, who did a lot of very early writings about rock music, and she saw the value in rock music when a lot of other people didn't, and really kind of elevated the form. What's her legacy, do you think?
Yeah, I think people keep on discovering her. So, you know, we've had someone contact us who's doing a PhD on her in Finland. I think she's someone that people discover her writing as well. We, of course, have her radio work, but she was an incredible writer. And so I think she's someone maybe every generation needs to rediscover almost. But reading her writing, it's still so fresh. Yeah.
It does? Does it feel punchy? I haven't read her stuff for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. She wrote a front page article in 1970 when there was a big women's march, that reading that now, she's sort of saying, you know, what women are wanting is just basic equality, and it absolutely still reads fresh today.
Not much has changed. We've got one more grab here, and I'd love to know what this one's about. We've got, all it's got is written Fanny Music is the title of the grab, but I'm not sure how I should introduce that. Maybe you can, Ben.
Yeah, we just wanted to get your attention.
Yes.
It worked. So Fanny was an all-female rock band, and one of the very first all-female rock bands. And Lillian, in her fearless way, at first when she engaged with their first album, she didn't think it was up to much chop. She wasn't afraid to say so. But then, much to her credit, this piece is about her saying how she is how they got in touch with her, they talked with her, and how she's hoping that it is going to go somewhere. So she wasn't afraid to admit when she might have been wrong, which was pretty rare back then, I think. And, she's just basically saying she's looking forward to hearing more of their stuff.
Are women finally making it in rock? This is Lillian Roxon with the Brightside Discotheque, your daily newscast from the world of music, presented by Brightside, the new shampoo that goes organic and gives your hair a natural shine. A few weeks ago, I was perhaps a little unkind about the new all-girl group Fanny, because I talked a lot about how pretty they were and not too much about their music. I had my reasons for that. Their album was pleasant enough, but lightweight. When they were in New York recently, they talked to me about that first album. "We made that record before we had ever really played together," they explain. They have done a second album, which they describe as much tighter and much tastier. Meanwhile, they have been travelling across America on a tour that has taken them from Fillmore West to Fillmore East and all the stops between. They found crowd reactions interesting. Some initial hostility from women, which eventually their music was able to break down. Some suspicion from men, which led them into the dangerous position of being tempted to play louder and harder just to show that they could. They resisted the temptation and got into the kind of rock and roll they call, with fairly straight faces, Fanny music.
Well, there you have it, Lillian Roxon talking about the band Fanny, and Beth Taylor from the National Film and Sound Archives. You just said to me while that was playing, they're still around.
They are. Well, yeah, America's ready for them, and they are touring. I think maybe one of the members isn't there anymore, but I got in touch with someone, connected with them when I was writing this, and yeah, they were delighted to hear that she was talking about them then. And yeah, they still look super cool. They're amazing.
I'm going to look them up today. The band is Fanny. Lillian Roxon kind of discovered them, or at least shared them with the world. Quite progressive as well, I would imagine, for that time to be using a word that obviously meant vagina, and that would have been quite confronting.
Well, I think in America, Fanny also is the bottom.
Of course.
But look, she was all the time. Like, she was before Germaine Greer. Germaine Greer dedicated female eunuch to her.
Yeah.
And Lillian was a liberated woman before they even were invented.
What a fascinating woman she was. Now, if we want to go and look up some of these tales from the archives, how do we do it? Do we just go to the National Film and Sound Archive website?
Yes, that's right. Yes, it'll be on the front page, and then you can also search there too, but it's right there on the front page.
And what is it that's up there?
Yeah, it's an online collection. So there's about 16 little clips that people can listen to, and I've also written notes about to give like a background of each thing, and we explore different things like the discotheque, and also after she died, there were some really beautiful tributes to her. So Darren Hinch worked really closely with her in New York, and he gives a beautiful tribute, and Molly Meldrum, and you definitely get a sense of her legacy when you can kind of see that body of work.
Beth, I get a sense that you really enjoyed doing the research on this. What did you get out of learning about the work of this person?
Yeah, I guess, I didn't know as much about that era of music. I mean, I knew about it. I knew the music, but I didn't kind of know the story behind it. And so I just felt like I had a backstage pass to that era in America and how exciting it was. And as you were saying before, I really can see a lot of the echoes of it coming up now. That was an incredible time for the women's movement that Lillian was involved with. And I just felt all of the resonances really strongly. So you're right. I loved it. I loved my job. It was incredible to put it together, and felt like a jigsaw kind of going together, all of these artists.
What does your day-to-day look like as someone at the National Film and Sound Archive? I'd love to know. I mean, obviously putting together packages like this for us so we can enjoy, but what's a normal day for you?
I do get to watch television for a living and listen to radio. And at the moment, for example, I'm working on something about vintage fashion. And also I get to do so many different things. So things about Kylie, I might sort of have maybe 6 things on my slate at once. And each day I might be delving right into something, or I might be concentrating on, making sure that things are re-scanned so they're looking really beautiful, the newsreels. And, I did something about Annette Kellerman that I think I spoke to a while back about. I particularly love doing stuff about surfacing the work of women. That's something that I feel really passionate about. So I'm also working on something about Jeannie Little. And yeah, just television, radio, music, everything all at once.
And putting them together so the rest of us can enjoy. And that's what the National Film and Sound Archives is all about. Just head to their website if you want to learn more about Lillian Roxon, the mother of rock and roll. Beth Taylor, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I'm so glad you enjoyed doing this too, because you can really get a sense that you do. And it's lovely to be able to share that.
Thank you. It's a privilege. Yeah, thanks.